This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Washington Post columnist John Feinstein will join us in 15 minutes. Austin Price brings the Ball Quest report a bit later in today's show. Glad you're with us. Hour 2 is here alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. He makes this show happen for us each and every day. Preds fall to Arizona. They have game 2 of the qualifying series. It's taking place tomorrow, 1:30 face-off. Preds watch party with the Midday 180 Scoreboard Bar and Grill. We've got t-shirts, great drink and food options tomorrow at Scoreboard, 2408 Music Valley Drive. It, at one point, was our home away from home during football season, and we're back tomorrow. Big porch slash patio, easily done for social distancing, and there's a bar out there, great waitresses that will make sure we have plenty of two-for-one options for you. Again, it's all available tomorrow, Scoreboard Bar and Grill. Hope you'll come out and see us. Say hello. Our first show out, guys, since March.
It's been a long time since we were sitting at Bridgestone Arena getting ready for Tennessee and Alabama to tip off in the SEC tournament, the first game of the day, a game that never happened when that tournament was canceled and then all of sports were canceled. And then we've been home ever since. Looking forward to the watch party tomorrow. $20 seafood boil special. I'm getting that from the promos running on the Zone. I don't know much more about it because there's a lot of people now asking, what does that mean? Is it all you can eat? Is it a certain amount of food for the seafood boil option? I'll get more information on that, but I can tell you that you're going to have the option for the seafood boil for $20. Also, 2-for-1 drinks. We're putting the call out there to season ticket holders. I saw Lebowski respond, and his ears perked up when he heard $20 seafood boil special. So he may be there also. Come join us. Watch the game. Puck drops at 1:30. We'll be there for the entirety of our show, and we'll stick around and watch some Preds hockey tomorrow. Hope to have a big crowd out there and 100 free T-shirts for those who arrive tomorrow and watch the game at Scoreboard Bar and Grill.
Now, when we had the crawfish boil, when the Kuharskis moved into the new home, the slogan was, you'll know if you're invited or not. But you already know that you're invited to this. This is not the same kind of deal. You know.
The Rock has become a major shareholder for the XFL.
Yeah, so what do you expect to happen with this deal? Like, well, revived as a minor league-ish kind of deal, or what?
The way I understand it is the TV contracts come with that purchase. That's how I read this. So as long as if TV wants to continue this, there would be a buyout if they don't, I'm assuming. But you also need to be able to play in the spring, and we don't know what's going on in this upcoming spring.
Well, I think one network has expressed, I don't remember the two networks was on. I think ESPN has made it clear it's not interested. And the other network has said it would be interested. Was it CBS?
I think CBS and CBS Sports Network had some of the games.
Yeah. So one is interested and one is not interested. But it's funny. I think we all presumed it was just dead until last week. There were rumblings about this auction. And now here we are. So smell what the Rock is cooking.
Doesn't it seem sort of like a one-year opportunistic cash grab situation, and he's basing this off there's going to be less football played this fall? Maybe. We already know there's going to be less football played in college football. We don't know to what extent right now there's going to be less football. But if there's cancellations in the NFL or problems there, maybe the first time that we have a vaccine and all is clear from COVID-19 will be this spring, and guess who capitalizes at that point with the return of football? Maybe the XFL if it's played in the spring. It just seems like a one-year fix, though. I still don't see this as anything that could be long-term, right?
Well, if it's a one-year fix and it goes really well, then maybe you turn it into something. I don't know. And then do you envision maybe like fringe college guys who are trying to get themselves tape, additional tape, to get themselves from undrafted into the fifth round doing it? If it's early enough? I don't know. There's a lot to be determined there, but he's no fool when it comes to making a buck and finding ways to.
Well, neither is Vince McMahon.
No,
and he gave this up quickly.
Also, COVID
for a second time.
Also, COVID shortened, though. I really would have liked to have seen, and look, I wasn't going to watch it too much, but I really like the idea of quarterback snaps out there for people to develop with. That's the one thing we talk about constantly. And had COVID not come around to interrupt the XFL, I would have been curious to see if
it's part of the reason Logan Woodside, got some reps in the Alliance, right? And then made an impression on the Titans coaches. They liked what they saw there, and they brought him into camp, and he ends up being on the practice squad. Now he's the backup.
Paul, would you have felt better about Logan Woodside had he played a full XFL season this year as the Titans backup, and you had a chance to see him there?
Well, I'll say who's the guy that ended up in Carolina? I like him.
PJ Walker.
I would feel pretty good about him being my backup. So somebody found somebody there, right? I like that guy. And he showed enough in that league to garner interest from several teams and then wound up with his college coach. But I think there are a lot of teams that would trade their number two quarterback for him right now. And if that's the one thing that comes out of the league, you know, there are probably going to be a handful of guys that come out of it. But snaps are snaps, right? And particularly for quarterbacks, the more you can get, the better it is for your career. And do I think that a season as a starter in the XFL or the AAF is more valuable than a second half of preseason games in the NFL? Yeah, I probably do. I mean, it's live. You're going against hungrier.
Yep.
And it's more, right? What do you think, Hutt? More.
No, I mean, it's a lot more reps. Yeah, you get the full game and you consecutive weeks of it. Plus practice. I mean, that to me is extremely valuable, and the development of that. It's also big for officials. You know, that was sort of the training ground for officials. Not that they were coming in and immediately taking on the white hat, but you were getting in line and they were choosing the best of the best to join the NFL during the preseason. And then from there, you're graded whether or not you'll be a part of a crew or not.
While you're mentioning officials, there's still not solid rules for officials opting out. We know there are some older officials, not as many as there used to be. And they're still working on the mechanics of this 6-man and potentially 5-man crews for all of the things we've talked about. Every Monday, there's some officiating issue that we talk about. And now we're going to talk about it on a 5-man crew, potentially. That's an avenue that's going to be, I think, a big story this year. You're also talking about the Thursday night crew or the Monday night crew working a Sunday game as well, doubling up. And I think, you know, a crew doubling up is probably more likely to make a mistake if it's working two games as opposed to one game on a weekend. There's some potential problems in that we've consistently circled back to, but I don't think it's getting the national fanfare at this stage that it maybe should be.
Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred trying to work through the COVID-19 pandemic without a bubble. We're seeing it work for the NBA and the NHL. We'll get into that with John Feinstein coming up. Also, we have, starting on Thursday, a major PGA Championship begins this coming week for the PGA Tour. We'll get into some of the discussion there as Brooks Koepka looks to make it 3 straight at the PGA Championship. And the Pac-12 and some of the players, Chad, they have you fired up. I know that. We'll dive into some of this discussion with John Feinstein and then have a big show topic based on the tweet that was circulating from players in the Pac-12.
I suspect John Feinstein and I will have very different opinions on this Pac-12 deal. That's my guess.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
This is your home for Titans football.
Touchdown, Titans! Titans! Yes! Yes!
104.5 The Zone.
Mid- Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, online edleysbbq.com. Each week at this time, we say hello to John Feinstein of the Washington Post, best-selling author. John, hope you're doing well.
Doing fine, Jonathan. Thanks for asking. I hope you guys are all doing well, too. I'm sure it's probably a little bit warm down there as it is here.
Same here. I'm curious to let's start here. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the NCAA and the Power Five. And if a decade from now, let's say maybe 5 years from now, we look back on 2020 and point to this as the start of the split between the Power Five and the NCAA as we know it.
Well, you know what's interesting, Jonathan? The Power Five has been on its own in football for a long time now. The NCAA has no involvement in the college football playoff or in anything the Power Five conferences do. The Power Five plus Notre Dame have been making up their own rules for, 10 years now. The BCS was run independent of the NCAA. Mark Emmert has no say in what they do. There is, even though technically the other six Division I conferences are part of the college football playoff, they have as much chance to get into the college football playoff as I have of getting into the Masters. So I think there's no question the NCAA is slowly crumbling before our eyes. I think what we are going to see is something that Mike Krzyzewski suggested to me 20 years ago, which is three separate groups running college athletics. I think you'll have a division for the Power Five football schools that will probably include everybody else, but there'll be a clearer separation. We won't pretend that UCF or any other non-Power Five school might go undefeated and have a chance to make the playoffs, because they won't. And then there'll be a separate division for college basketball, which is already happening even as we speak. I think I mentioned to you guys last week that there is an adjunct ad hoc committee that Dan Gavitt, who runs the NCAA tournament for the NCAA, is chairing right now with a bunch of important D1 coaches trying to make decisions on how to proceed for the next college football season. I wouldn't be at all shocked to see a college basketball division with someone like Dan Gavitt as the commissioner. And then there'll be a non-revenue division. Because as I've said many times before, and I think you guys would agree, to try to make a rule book that is for Alabama football, Tennessee football, any of the Power Five football schools or Power basketball schools that has the same rules as for, you know, Quinnipiac field hockey, or Princeton swimming, I mean, take your pick, is ridiculous. They're completely different in the way they're run, in the money they have, in what's at stake. And I think we will come to that. I think we've been coming to that for years. And probably what's going on now will eventually put all of this over the top.
So, John, you've got the separate issues with NCAA and the big conferences, and then each big conference has their own set of issues also in how they're going to be governed and how they're going to move forward. And now the Pac-12 has another issue with what's being claimed. I think it's over 400, hundreds of players that are saying they're behind this movement to possibly boycott the season if their demands with health, safety, social justice, they're not met with the Pac-12. What do you make of this move by the players? What do you think happens now with the Pac-12 and their response?
Well, there's a couple layers here, Chad. I think, first of all, just within the Pac-12, Larry Scott is going to finally have to earn his money here as commissioner because they can't just respond and say, oh, yeah, sure, we hear you. We'll do the best we can. They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to sit down with these athletes and show them how they're going to try to keep them safe. You know, there are all sorts of stories coming out, not just in the Pac-12, but all over the country, about football players who have been on campus who aren't being kept socially distanced properly, who aren't getting proper testing. As we get closer to the season, when teams, if there are games, are going to be interacting with one another, playing football. We all know that football is, by definition, a contact sport, probably the contact sport, although basketball and hockey are contact sports too, for sure, that it's going to get harder and harder. And then there are, of course, the social justice issues that are important to most college football athletes at the highest level. I think 70% of them are minorities. And so I wouldn't be surprised. The second layer of this isn't just how Larry Scott and the Pac-12 deal with the players, but if the players in the other major conferences don't look up and say, hey, you know what? They're right. We need more protection. We need more serious protocols. We want to be able to speak out more on social justice. We want some of the money that these schools are and conferences are making to go to social justice issues. We want to speed up the NIL issue that's been ongoing for a while now. I wouldn't be at all shocked if we don't hear in the next week or two, as we get closer to the season, more of the major conference athletes coming forward and doing and saying some of the same things the Pac-12 conference athletes are saying.
As I smash my elbow, how do you think Washington State reacting to this, where kids apparently who've tweeted that they're part of this movement are being told to empty out their lockers?
Yeah, I think, again, that's where Paul Larry Scott has to get involved right away and has to speak to the president of Washington State and the AD and Nick Rolovich, the coach. Nick Rolovich has no history at Washington State as the head coach. He just took over. So he doesn't have anything to fall back on with the school to say, hey, look, I won you this many games. I made you this much money. I got you to this many bowls. Unless he comes out very quickly and apologizes and shows, again, tangibly that he's going to go back in the other direction, I think he could lose his job without ever coaching a game in the current climate.
So baseball and where we are right now. Now the Cardinals affected. Of course, that affects more games. From a threat level perspective, John, how concerned are you for the future of this season? Or do you think, like Rob Manfred said, there's no real danger to the season right now and they're just going to forge ahead?
Chad, if Rob Manfred tells me the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow, I'm going to check the western horizon. I don't trust him to get anything right. He hasn't gotten anything right. He mishandled the Astros situation. He mishandled the situation with the negotiations to get back on the field. He probably, and it should have made more of an effort to convince the players to play in bubbles the way the NBA and the NHL are doing. They would have needed four or five of them, and it would have been difficult. I get that. But he probably should have made more effort there rather than, you know, hiding behind the owners who wanted to try to squeeze every dollar they could out of the players. And now, did you see his quote the other day when the issue came up? And he said, I'm not a quitter. Now, what in the hell does he being a quitter or not being a quitter have to do with how you deal with a pandemic? We're talking health here. We're not talking showing your toughness. We're not talking playing through an injury or anything like that. And he says, I'm not a quitter. He's irrelevant. The health of the players is the only thing that can make decisions here. And the first 10 days have not been encouraging. I think, Chad, this week is critical. If they can get through this week without any more outbreaks, without any other teams having to shut down, I think they can keep things under control. The Marlins didn't have any negatives in the last 24 hours. The Cardinals are still dealing with this. But if this week produces another team or two with positive tests, with games having to be canceled, I'm not sure they're going to get to the end of the season.
John Feinstein from the Washington Post is our guest on the Midday 180. John, I got to ask you about your Mets and Yoenis Cespedes. What a weird story. Just completely bolts from an Atlanta hotel room, doesn't tell the team, doesn't tell anyone, and then later explains that he's leaving because he's done with the season because of COVID-19 concerns.
Yeah. Chad, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching the game yesterday because I am a masochist, so I watch Met games. And early in the game, Gary Cohen made the announcement that Cespedes hadn't shown up at the ballpark. They didn't know where he was. He wasn't answering his cell phone. I mean, it sounded a little bit scary, like something had honestly gone wrong. And then they said, well, we still don't know where he is, but we don't fear for his safety. And as Gary again said, nobody knows what the heck that means. And then after the game, they announced that his agent had called Brody Van Wagenen, agent to agent, to say that he was opting out. And it's not just weird. It's incredibly selfish. I mean, again, I understand a player opting out because of fear of COVID-19. I totally get that. But if you're thinking about it, which he must have been on Saturday at the latest, don't you go talk to your manager, to your general manager. Don't you give them a heads up? You just pack up your hotel room and leave on Sunday morning without saying anything to the team, leaving your teammates wondering what the heck's going on. If I'm the Mets, he never plays for me again. He never plays for me again. Not because he opted out, but because of the way he opted out.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
First golf major coming up here in some time. I think it's probably the most major thing since COVID. Golf's played out pretty well, I think we'd all agree, since this thing. How do you anticipate this playing out? And who do you feel like's in prime position maybe to lift the first big trophy?
Well, Paul, I think you're right. First of all, this is the most major event we've had since everything was shut down by the COVID in March. Hardy Park is an outstanding golf course. It's a great venue for a major. It's a big hitters park. So if you're looking at favorites, you're going to start at least with guys who hit it far: Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, guys like that. But we all know that the one thing that's almost certain about a major is that nothing is certain, that there'll be somebody on that leaderboard on Sunday who nobody was talking about on Thursday morning. Obviously Tiger Woods is playing, and you never count him out because he's Tiger Woods, even though he's only played once since the COVID shut golf down back in March. I think that has a lot to do with his back. It's still not 100% and probably never will be. But you never count him out. I think somebody asked me yesterday if there should be some kind of asterisk next to the winner's name because they're playing with no fans. I couldn't disagree with that more. I think everybody's going to be playing under the same conditions. Whomever wins is going to have to reach within himself on Sunday because there'll be no crowds to cheer him on. There'll be no cheers when you make a big putt. It'll be different. There's no question. But the pressure will be the same. The pressure will be the same because the major championship's at stake. And I think it'll be a fascinating week, and I'm looking forward to it.
No asterisk either if Koepka wins it and goes for the three-peat at the PGA Championship. You don't see that. That's been through, since the 50s or 60s since we last saw that happen. Certainly that's going down in the history books, and not because there were no fans there.
Absolutely right. Jonathan, and actually the last time somebody won three PGAs in a row was Walter Hagen, who won four in a row in the 1920s. So we're talking almost 100 years ago since it happened at a PGA. And so if Koepka does pull it off, and he played well until the last couple holes in Memphis over the weekend, seems to be healthy, he's had knee issues, as you know, then it would be an extraordinary achievement. And seems to be rounding into form just in time.
What is he like behind the scenes? I feel like he's done more interviews in the last year than what I expected or what I've seen from him in the past. I don't know if that's good or bad. When I see him, though, I do find him interesting. Although I remember having a conversation with you maybe a year, 2 years ago about him, where it doesn't just have a, he's very quiet behind the scenes. Maybe I was almost going to say unlikable, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
No, not at all. I'm pretty sure what I would have told you then is what I'll tell you now, is I've always liked him. I first sat down with him one-on-one back in 2015 when he was just coming on the tour full-time, but was clearly headed in the direction of being a star. And I interviewed him because I was working on my Ryder Cup book for 2016 and thought he was going to be on the team a year later, and he was. And I loved his attitude. He was trying to make the President's Cup team for 2015 at that point. And the only reason he wasn't going to be on the team was because he'd been playing in Europe in 2014 and thus didn't get any points that year. And a lot of people thought he should be a captain's pick. And he said, you know what, if they don't pick me, it's no big deal. I'm going to be on the Ryder Cup team next year, and I'm going to play on lots of President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams. And he was, of course, 100% right about it. He's a guy who takes what he does very seriously, but doesn't take himself very seriously. A lot of golfers, a lot of athletes, take both themselves and what they do seriously. Brooks isn't like that. He can make fun of himself. He takes, as I said, when he's out there on the golf course, he's very serious about it. And I love watching him play. I love his game. And I'd be thrilled if he won a third straight.
John Feinstein joins us on Mondays as we hit some of the national headlines from across the country. John, thank you as always, and we'll do it again next week.
My pleasure, guys. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Thanks.
John Feinstein. Going and just picking up on the conversation about Manfred and not playing in the bubble. The one thing, guys, that all of these leagues, they can do a lot of things the right way in preparation. But then players and staff go to a casino. You know, there's a report that the Cardinals went to a casino. The NFL has measures in place that they're going to be fined a hefty fine if they go indoors. It could be a party, a concert, a church service. You're getting fined for it because you're going to disrupt all of the testing that they've been trying to do in order to proceed with their season. Major League Baseball players, according to, there's a TV analyst that said this over the weekend, that the Cardinals went to a casino, or at least one did, and then brought it to the clubhouse.
I would ask this. Like, I'm not happy, obviously, with what's going on, right? And the Cardinals don't just mess it up with the Cardinals. They mess it up for the teams on the Cardinals' schedule, right? Mm-hmm. And so last night there were, you know, four teams out of action as a result of what the Marlins have going on and as a result of what the Cardinals have going on and all of that. But, and I'm on the health and safety side of this, but, you know, we had Yankees Red Sox on TV last night. Chad's got his Braves playing. You've got your Orioles playing. I would offer up a solution where, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with the playoffs. I don't know what's going to happen with the standings. I think you're probably going off of winning percentage in the end. But do you have to shut it down if things are happening like are happening with the Marlins or the Cardinals? Or can you put teams on the shelf like you're doing? And if it's not too many teams at a time, can you still be providing a product where you have a Yankees Red Sox game on nationally on Sunday Night Baseball that a lot of America is going to enjoy, particularly when there's not a lot of other things going on?
It was a fun game.
When Chad's able to check in on his Braves, provided that they're not in it, and you've got David's got the Cubs and you've got the Orioles and I've got the Yankees, and I'm happy to get to see my team play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they're screwed out of Marlins games because the Marlins have something go on, or the Phillies are a victim of what the Marlins have going on, it sucks, but so be it. But do you have to shut the whole thing down, or can we still have some? Well, I'll take some.
Paul, the answer is no, you don't shut it down because they're showing us you don't have to do that. And you
it sounds like they're building towards maybe doing that. I'll take some.
Well, but what's going to happen right now is you're going to have a ton of seven-inning doubleheaders that are coming up for these teams that are missing these games.
We saw it yesterday.
Well, just look at the standings is what's so weird right now. The Braves are in first place at 7-3. The Marlins are in second place by winning percentage at 2-1. They've played three games, the Braves 10 at this point in the season. So it's already stacking up against them. So now those games they miss, you're going to see a lot of four games in 2 days, all seven-inning game type situations. with the Marlins and the teams that they've been missing these games with.
I think you have to set a minimum games played to qualify for winning percentage. That would be my solution to that in terms of the playoff thing. But aren't you with me, Chad? You want some instead of none. We're not getting all. That's going to be clear.
Well, the overriding point here is you can plan all you want, bubble or no bubble. And there's always going to be that one in the group that's going to screw it up for everyone. We nearly saw it with the Clippers.
On his way home from the funeral.
And going back into the bubble, didn't want to say where he had been. And that's going into the bubble. Luckily, they figured it out, right, because of a social media post from a rapper. That's the only reason they knew that Williams had gone to a strip club in Atlanta before he came back into the bubble. If the report from the TV analyst Hairston is true, that there was a St. Louis Cardinal or Cardinals who went to a casino, that's screwing it up for the entire team and whoever they're happening to be facing that particular game or day or weekend. It's just, you shake your head, because it doesn't matter what planning or how long you plan for this. You know, the village idiot's going to screw it up for everyone. It's the 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Get more content from Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on the 180 at 6. Tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
Another well-known player has opted out of the NFL season. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Juwan James opting out, a member of the Denver Broncos offensive line.
Overpaid.
Factors in for a couple of reasons. First, he's a big free agent addition for them from a couple years ago from Miami. Second, it's a Titans opponent in week one with no preseason game. So they'll be getting someone else ready for his starting role on the offensive line. He's opting out, as are roughly 40 other players now. And other players, including Devin McCourty, not happy with the league trying to move up the opt-out date to as early as this Wednesday, I believe, was the latest report I saw, Paul.
Yeah, league just really in a panic over this, and it seems flat out like they want it as soon as possible to get guys to stop from opting out.
To know what you're planning for.
Yeah, but some of these guys just now getting into buildings, right? We saw a picture over the weekend, Derrick Henry getting in. Look, the negotiation was 7 days after we signed this agreement. The agreement, I'm not sure, still has been signed. If it was signed, it was signed like Sunday.
But at some point, if you're reporting and you're going through meetings and you're getting tested and you show up for the walkthroughs, at some point the agreement is in place and it's in working order, even if you haven't signed it.
I agree. If I'm a player, though, I want to see as much as I could see before having a deadline, right? So I'd like to be in the building. I'd like to see how the meetings run. I'd like to get a sense of the spacing and all of the things that pertain to the potential spread of COVID. And so sure, I don't think asking for 7 days after the agreement becomes official, when that's what we negotiated as players, is a big deal. So the league really pressing for Wednesday, when it could be a difference of what, 4 days, seems desperate to me. Especially with big name players, pushing back.
Well, the theory is there are a handful of players who, and I'm just giving the other side of it here, why they want to move it up.
Sure.
A handful of players who are either on a roster bubble or have some big guaranteed money next year. They could take a year off and it'd be just fine. Like they're taking their payment now, sitting out, and will return next year with no questions asked. Now there are others that are on the roster bubble that want to, you know, not push it right now, knowing that they can be back on a roster and competing a year from now.
You know,
and they're taking the money. They're not doing it for health reasons.
This was interesting idea that Florio put forth, is that a guy that really has a concern, but mm-hmm. sees this hard COVID deadline, where there's no opting back in should retire. Because if you retire, you get put on the retired list. You can come back out. You can go back to the team and, you know, if there's a vaccine or if you see that things have settled down or the numbers are way down or whatever, you have more flexibility off the retired list than
you have. You can come back in November.
Yeah.
Or theoretically.
Conceivably, you know, now you don't want to jerk the team around, but you could go to the GM and say, listen, I have some serious concerns. But rather than opting out, I want to leave myself the possibility of coming back. I'm not saying, you know, I want to jerk you around with your roster, but I'm saying, you know, it's conceivable to me that I'd feel a lot better about things in November and I'd want to come back and help the team. What if I retire and gave us some flexibility as opposed to opting out?
I wish I felt like a higher percentage of these players actually were concerned about COVID-19 health risk and weren't gaming the system.
There's a huge win on the system here. You get $150,000 and you lose a year of your contract.
You get more than that based on what your status is in the league. You can get up to $500,000.
Yeah. No, the 350 is if you have a personal health concern. I don't know. It might be a family health concern as well.
Okay, but you can make $350,000 to do nothing.
But there's a
well, then
there's
it counts choice. Against next
Peter year's King salary. References a choice that C.J. Mosley has in New York, where he can make a phone call and get $350 or $150. It's up to him.
Well, then he's got some family or personal concern. But the other thing is, it comes off your next year's salary, and then it takes away a year of you going towards using up your contract, so to speak. So you're freezing your contract for a year. Some of these older guys, I mean, this could be the end for Dante Hightower. Certainly could be the end for Patrick Chung, who's getting up there. So I don't know that those two guys are gaming the system in any way, shape, or form.
I'm not saying all of them are. I'm saying I wish I felt legitimate that everyone just had concerns and wasn't trying to do something else.
Give me some examples of guys you feel like you suspect don't have legitimate concerns.
Well, Peter King lays it out there for you, the column you read every Monday morning, Paul. C.J. Mosley, you already know that one.
C.J. Mosley is the one that comes to mind for me.
He's guaranteed like $8 million. I don't have it pulled up in front of him. He's guaranteed $8 million if he's on the roster or not next year for the Jets. I mean, that's on the Jets for getting his contract out. But he played, what, two games last year, got hurt. He's opting out this year, and he's going to have a ton, millions for two games. So, and on top of that, they trade Adams. That's on them as well. But my point is, he's guaranteed the money without even playing. So instead of playing, he's going to take the year, opt out. He can call in according to King, in the way they describe it, he can call in and ask for the couple $100,000. And then next year, there's a bonus and a payment that's due at a certain time next year.
That's one guy. I don't see a trend of guys gaming the system here. I don't.
So you're cool with just letting this deal go into perpetuity where
they may not sign it
until week five? I mean, according to you, it's okay because they agreed.
You want them to see him just sit back and wait.
I've never said anything like that. I think they get a week after the deal is done, which is what they agreed to.
My point
for the
is,
league
though,
to try to hurry it faster than that, to me, is breaking the deal.
My point is, tell me when the deal will be done to you.
The deal will be done to me when it's signed by both sides and executed. I don't know what the delay is on that. It's driving me crazy, too. It should have been done a week and a half ago.
What the league is saying is the delay in it is allowing players – more time to decide exactly their status. When the league and the teams are saying, let us know so we can plan to go on without you. Instead of you telling us about a week before, instead of being Andrew Luck, let us know ahead of time on when you're opting out for the season. Well, Andrew Luck opted out on the Colts about a week before camp ended last year.
Well, there's a big difference between a week from today would be August 10th. And I don't think they're asking for a week from today. I think they're asking for a week from, I thought it was done Saturday, which would have been, so it'd be Saturday, the 8th. So there's a lot of haggling if the difference is the 5th to the 8th, 3 days.
If the players don't sign, it's a lot of haggling for
3 days. Well, we don't know that's the holdup, that the players aren't signing.
Meanwhile, D'Amore Smith is on vacation. So you tell me if the deal is done or not.
That's weird. that DeMarcus Smith is on vacation.
I reached out to him and was told he'll join the show when he's off vacation this week. So,
well, there's certainly
tell me if the negotiation's done or not when the NFLPA executive director goes on vacation.
Well, certainly somebody else can sign it. Certainly he can sign it on vacation electronically. I'm not willing to say this is on the Players Association for it not being done. I don't know that.
Then why would the NFL be demanding that the opt-out date be Wednesday if it's on them?
They're demanding that the opt-out date be moved up.
And you don't know that it's on the PA as to why the deal's not done?
I don't know who it's on that the deal's not done.
It can't be on the NFL. The NFL's ready to have the opt-out deadline.
But that maybe they're not ready on other stuff. Maybe they haven't signed it. We don't know everything that's going on.
What we know,
the NFL's done a good job of shining light on this thing not being done because they want the opt-out date that they want.
Here's the real issue behind the scenes. What the league is trying to prevent from happening is the player who can see the writing on the wall for his roster spot bowing out as soon as the going gets tough in camp in these roster battles, and then you're left needing some depth or you're left finding a starter.
Again,
that's what's going to happen.
I don't know that anybody's going to see the writing on the wall on August 8th when they're running and stretching. There's not even going to be a depth chart up.
The league wants it done in advance of all of that.
Well, they're on the field for the first time in a competitive situation on the 14th. So I can understand the league absolutely wanting it done before the 14th for the reason you're saying, which is a long way from the 5th, which is the deadline that they want.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.